Welcome into Words with Wallace. I'm your host, Nick Wallace. Coming at you, it is Friday, September 19th. Been a hot minute. What is this, my second month-long break of the offseason? Not great. Not going to lie. Not going to come at you with a bunch of excuses. But I will say, we are back in a big way on today's podcast. As you can tell by the title of this episode, we are going to be joined by my good friend Dime Dropper in a little bit of the Locked On Clippers podcast, as well as his own Dime Dropper channel, to talk about a bombshell that has hit the NBA and the Clippers specifically that we're going to talk more about in a little bit. Dime has been hammering the coverage of this story on his podcast, so I want to provide a little bit of context in this intro before we cut over to the segment with Dime. But before we can even get into that, we do have a few headlines to talk about, right? Some other NBA headlines I at least want to mention in this podcast, since it's been so long since the last time I got you guys an episode. So starting off with restricted free agency watch, ironically enough, that's kind of where we left off in our last podcast, waiting for the shoe to drop on really just the restricted free agents, besides like a few legacy free agents, we'll say, and like Russell Westbrook and Ben Simmons that still haven't signed. Starting off with the news that Malcolm Brogdon signed with the New York Knicks on a one-year, $3.3 million contract. So super cheap contract for Brogdon and the Knicks. Love that move. When Brogdon's healthy, he's a fantastic player, fantastic role piece, just adding to the depth of a new-look Knicks team. They added Yabusele and a few other pieces this offseason as well, so we'll see if new Knicks coach Mike Brown can reach deeper into the bench this season than what we saw previously with Tom Thibodeau. We also are starting to see some of these restricted free agency dominoes fall, starting with Josh Giddey, who got a four-year, $100 million contract from the Chicago Bulls, which is pretty fair. You could argue it's a bit of an overpay just because Josh Giddey, we saw him in playoff settings with the Oklahoma City Thunder, and that was a very different team. He was asked to play a very different role, but unsure of what playoff Giddey looks like. But during the regular season, and especially for stretches at the end of last year, he was a fantastic player, filling up the stat sheet. So with how repressed the restricted free agency market is, I feel like the Bulls maybe could have held out a little bit of that, but you can't get mad at being able to bring in a close to all-star level player when he's playing at his ceiling for 4 years, $25 million. That really isn't too bad. It's far off from a max contract. So I don't hate it. I just don't love it for the Bulls either. Cam Thomas signed a contract as well. This one was really fascinating. Just a one-year, $6 million qualifying offer for Cam Thomas. So what that really means is that he will be able to hit unrestricted free agency next year. And that is just really cheap for Cam Thomas. Whatever you think of him, I know he doesn't pass the rock much. I know he's kind of a one-trick pony as far as a shot creator and scorer, but that's still a fantastic skill to have if you were only to have one skill. Cam Thomas has it. That's an insanely cheap contract, almost to the point where I feel like the NBA might need to look into restricted free agency with the new CBA and how it is really repressing the market of these guys, because there's a reason that we're this late into the offseason and we still have guys like Jonathan Kuminga, who have not signed offers yet. Quentin Grimes, who have not signed an offer yet. Like, these are guys that there should be significant demand for, and obviously restricted free agency restricts that ability for these guys to sign the contracts that they're deserved. And so I felt like it didn't used to be as big of a deal to have restricted free agents. Now it is with the new CBA, so we need to look into that. Also, again, waiting on some other free agents to sign, like veterans like Russell Westbrook, Ben Simmons, Malik Beasley. What an offseason for that guy and the gambling controversy that he was wrapped up in. Seems like that storm is mostly cleared, but a lot of teams have already spent that money, so I'll be interested to see where Malik Beasley lands after a career year last season. Now, before we bring in Dime Dropper, I wanted to provide a bit of context on this bombshell NBA storyline that is surrounding the Los Angeles Clippers, their owner Steve Ballmer, their franchise player Kawhi Leonard, and what has turned into an investigation if the Clippers circumvented the salary cap to pay Kawhi Leonard even more money than what is listed on his NBA contract through their partner and former team sponsor Aspiration. So Aspiration was a green bank that pledged to support environmental efforts, plant a bunch of trees to offset the carbon emissions of companies that invested in it. It's a great premise, and they had a lot of notable celebrity endorsements and investors. And by no means was Steve Ballmer the only person funding this operation or the only significant investor that they had. I think at one point Aspiration had a valuation of over $2 billion, if I'm not mistaken. So a lot of potential within this company at a certain point of time. But again, they have since gone bankrupt. The owner of the company has since pled guilty to wire fraud. And the $300 million partnership that Aspiration had with the Clippers has since fallen apart. Pablo Torre on his podcast, Pablo Torre Finds Out, brought this situation to life because he saw that of the parties that were scheduled to receive payments from Aspiration, one of the companies listed was KL2 Aspire LLC, which was Kawhi Leonard's company. And Kawhi Leonard was essentially slated to receive $28 million in sponsorship endorsements, a sponsorship contract over the span of a couple different years. And so $28 million for off-the-court sponsorship, off-the-court activation is massive no matter how you slice it. But especially when you keep in mind that he did nothing, and I repeat, nothing, to ever publicly endorse Aspiration, that becomes an even more ridiculous amount of money. I guess the way that the contract was written, and again, you can dive into Pablo Torre's podcast to learn more about this. He does a fantastic job uncovering this story and diving into further detail. It essentially states that Kawhi had outs for every single marketing initiative that he was asked to do. If he didn't align with the vision, if he didn't feel like endorsing that day, if only if Aspiration actually instructed him to do something, did he do it. And ultimately, over the course of those 4 years or however long the contract was, it was found that Kawhi did absolutely nothing to publicly endorse Aspiration. And even as the company was failing, going under, going bankrupt, their stock is plummeting, they still had to find a way to pay Kawhi Leonard. In part because Kawhi's uncle, the notorious Uncle Dennis, was the one listed on the contract between Aspiration and KL2 Aspire LLC. Now, the reason I say Uncle Dennis is notorious is because during the great Kawhi Leonard free agency sweepstakes of 2019, in which Kawhi was coming off a championship with the Raptors, he was widely regarded as the best, if not one of the best players in the NBA at that time. There was massive free agency, and ultimately, it was reported that Kawhi came down to a decision between the Clippers and the Lakers. It was noted and it was reported that Uncle Dennis, again, a guy that helped raise Kawhi Leonard his entire life, had his hand out in these negotiations, asking for insane requests like ownership in the team, all these guaranteed off-the-court money. He just had his hand out looking to get whatever he could financially during Kawhi's free agency decision. Even to the point where I believe the NBA actually launched an investigation in the Clippers just to make sure they weren't circumventing the salary cap when Kawhi originally signed in 2019. Now, this Aspiration deal came into a place a couple years later, but still, it's found out that Kawhi Leonard, again, was scheduled to receive $28 million. That is insane, especially for doing absolutely nothing. Now, Ballmer directly, again, Steve Ballmer, Clippers owner, paid Aspiration at least $50 million directly to the company. And some of these payments even took place far after the company was going under. It is also worth noting that Kawhi also had stock in Aspiration that was valued up to $20 million in its own. So that could get that $28 million even closer to the $50 that Ballmer put in. And I think the closest thing that we have to a smoking gun when it comes to this story is the fact that Kawhi was scheduled to receive $7 million annually as part of this contract. And they were broken up into quarterly payments of $1.75 million. And now as the company is going under, Aspiration's late on all these bills, it is reported that Uncle Dennis was following up, making sure that Kawhi was going to receive payment for this sponsorship or lack thereof. And it is reported that Clippers co-owner Dennis Wong reportedly invested $1.99 million into a widely regarded as a failing Aspiration at that point in time, just 9 days before Kawhi was scheduled to receive his $1.75 million quarterly payment. So that's the closest we have where like the money that Clippers ownership is putting in directly correlates and even aligns timing-wise with the money that Kawhi was scheduled to receive, which again, just leaves us to the potential outcome that the Clippers were really just paying off Aspiration to make sure that Kawhi got the money that he was promised in that contract, in which, again, at least $28 million to do absolutely nothing. And it's very fishy that Pablo had reports from inside the company saying that even as shit was hitting the fan and it was obvious that the company was going under, their number one priority was paying Kawhi Leonard to do absolutely nothing. So this looks really bad for the Clippers. I know I just did a pretty bang-up job explaining that to all you guys, so forgive me for that. If you'd like to learn more information on this story, obviously, you need to check out Pablo Torre from The Athletic and his podcast, Pablo Torre Finds Out. I think he's released 3-hour-plus long podcasts going into this story. The original one's really interesting. Then he brings in Mark Cuban, who just like publicly said he was Team Ballmer in all this, and obviously a very rich and successful guy himself, so you want to have him in your corner if you're a Clippers fan, and we talk about that with Dime in a little bit. And there's another episode where Pablo stumbles on even more evidence, and I believe the last episode kind of goes into that Dennis Wong $2 million payment, so it's all super interesting, and Dime Dropper himself on his Locked On Clippers podcast does a fantastic job with that as well. So I just want to provide the context in saying that this is a complete mess. I don't think Adam Silver wants to believe that Ballmer did this, but they are forced to investigate this. It has since been announced that they are probably not going to find a decision in the NBA's investigation until at least the All-Star break, which is conveniently being hosted at the Clippers Intuit Dome this year, which adds another layer to this story and maybe might make it even more difficult for Adam Silver to really lay down the hammer here, which he's really never done before in his entire tenure. Like, the only thing he really did was actually bring out Donald Sterling. Like, that's really all he did, was kick the former Clippers owner out of town to bring in Steve Ballmer. That's the most stern he's been during his time as commissioner. So you really hate to see it, even as somebody that has no rooting interest in the Clippers. But it is a fascinating story. It's interesting to see when the punishment comes out, what the punishment will be, how this affects other teams. Like, it's said all the time that other teams are looking for ways to circumvent the salary cap as well. It's hard to believe this would be the only instance in the NBA. But at the same time, no other owner has as much money as Ballmer. And it's just a shitload of money on top of NBA contracts that are already more lucrative than ever before. I just doubt that there's other teams that even have the means to go beyond the salary cap like this and pay players off their record, at least as directly as it appears in this report, again, coming from Pablo Torre. So the only history we have of this is a Joe Smith situation in which David Stern actually found the Timberwolves guilty of circumventing the salary cap in the 90s. Again, totally different regime. David Stern, ironically enough, had a much more stern reputation as a commissioner because he laid the hammer on the Timberwolves, took away 5 first-round picks. They suspended the owner and general manager, Kevin McHale, for a year, which was insane at the time as well. And so who knows if it'll be anything like that, but this is about as serious as it gets because it's cheating. It gives teams a competitive advantage, and the NBA is going to have to take this very seriously. So I want to know what happens to the Clippers. I want to know when the punishment is announced. I also want to know, like, does anything legally happen to Kawhi? I mean, he has these degrees of separation with the LLC, with Uncle Dennis being listed there. But it's really fascinating to know, like, the player knows that this is against the rules as well, if it is found out that they are circumventing the salary cap. So I wonder how Kawhi is affected in this. Would they go as far as forfeiting his contract, removing that from the books? Who knows? But it's a fascinating story, and we're going to talk more about that with Dime Dropper in a little bit. We're now joined by my guy Dime Dropper from the Locked On Clippers podcast, as well as his own Dime Dropper feed, where he's posting great basketball content, basketball historian, everything you need for the offseason, and certainly everything you need as a Clippers fan. How's it going, Dime? We're happy to have you.
Well, it's good to be here, Nick. Appreciate you having me on again, and always good to talk to fellow UMass Minutemen, of course.
Dude, I had to rep the shirt, like I was saying off air. It's the best piece of UMass merch that I got, so I had to rep it for this occasion.
There we go.
I know you've been hammering daily Clippers content, even in the dog days of the offseason here, so we definitely respect the grind for that. But a lot of headlines, some of which I covered in the intro of this podcast here, so I just got to start off by saying, what are the general vibes as we sit here 30 days out from the start of the NBA season over in Clippers Nation?
The general vibes are it's Clippers against the world right now. It seems like every single person that comments on my videos or just everyone on Twitter is Clippers are guilty, Clippers are guilty. How could aspiration pay Kawhi Leonard that much money to get literally nothing in return? Which I'm not going to lie and say that doesn't look fishy. I'm not super hip to all these business deals and sponsors that the NBA does. I'm obviously, as a fan of our team, not going to go one way or the other. A lot of Clipper fans are just like, it's a big nothing burger. Nothing's going to happen. It'll be a slap on the wrist. I'm not going to go that far because these are some serious violations if we've done these things. I'm just kind of in the middle. Like, I'm reporting the news. I'm waiting to see what happens. My biggest fear is losing draft picks. Like, we already have a terrible pick situation based on the trade we made for Paul George to accommodate Kawhi Leonard, by the way. And if we lose even more draft picks in the 2030s, like, it would just be hard to stomach that. And it would just add insult to injury of what's already been a very disappointing tenure with Kawhi Leonard on the Clippers. And I'm not the type of Clipper fan that's going to defend Kawhi no matter what, because what has he done to deserve defense the way that some Clipper fans, you know, defend him on Twitter? And in real life, I think it's a lot more, it's 50-50. You know, a lot of Clipper fans really like him. I think the majority of Clipper fans really like him, but there are some others that are spent and done with this. But a lot of Clipper fans understand that we can't really pivot if we don't have picks. We kind of have to wait for 2027. So we will see what happens. But if we do get penalized and they do find the Clippers guilty, I mean, what can you say? Of course, the Clippers are going to have to take accountability, But Kawhi Leonard and Uncle Dennis have only caused problems since they've come here. And all we've gotten from it is a Western Conference Finals berth, which was the best season in franchise history in terms of playoff success. And Kawhi was a huge part of that first round that we would not have won without him against Dallas, where he was insanely good, historically great from an efficiency perspective. But one series, that's great. And then he won us two games against Utah in our eventual Western Conference Finals run. I mean, this is the guy we brought in to win a championship. So it's been very disappointing. I've been over it, but I can't do anything about it. So I report the news. I look forward to the community aspect of Clipper fans when the season starts. But the results, nah, man, I don't get worked up over it right now. And maybe one day I'll find that again. But it's felt a lot more like work the last 2 years because I have not believed in us actually winning anything. So
totally, man. I mean, it's really complicated right now. Like, again, both of us kind of being over our skis trying to understand this legal jargon. And the important thing, too, is that it's a moving target, right? I mean, you've been hammering this story nonstop. I think like 4 or 5 podcasts on this story alone within the past couple of weeks since it first broke. So for any of those listening to this podcast that enjoy my little open on it, definitely check out Dime Dropper's Locked On Clippers podcast, where you can have him go more in the weeds on that. But I think you've been pretty fair with your assessment of it. Obviously, there's some bias there. Like, you want to be innocent. We all want to believe that Steve Ballmer is innocent. Like, I don't want to be a billionaire simp here, but he's easily the most beloved owner in the NBA for what he's done for your franchise and just the game of basketball. It's just awesome to have an ambassador with that level of wealth and status on the side of promoting the NBA. Like, he's not just a Clippers ambassador. He's an NBA ambassador. So I genuinely would love this to be not true, too. Now, you know, whether that ends up happening, like, we'll have to see. But it is a moving target for sure. I think it is really fascinating touching on the Kawhi piece as well. Like, it's going to be really difficult to evaluate his legacy, and we're not really going to be able to do that until, A, he plays out the remainder of his Clippers contract, and we find out the results of this suspension. But that's definitely going to be in the mix for that as well, of how we see Kawhi's tenure in Los Angeles. Because you've been obviously covering this story ad nauseum, I didn't want to spend too much time on it, but I did want to hit you with 3 quick questions before we get into some more upbeat Clippers offseason talk, because I felt like you guys had a great offseason before this, so we will get into that in a second. But as we sit here and record, again, it's Friday, September 19th. It's a moving target. I don't think anybody on this that listens to this podcast is going to hold this take against you. But as of right now, like, do you think Ballmer intentionally circumvented the salary cap to pay Kawhi Leonard?
Wow. Yes.
I think so, too.
I think unless there's just so much I don't know. I love that Mark Cuban's going to bat for us so much just because he's a lot more knowledgeable about these topics, but everyone's attacking him in the comments saying he's just in over his head and all this stuff. It just doesn't make much sense. I think Ballmer just did whatever it took to get Kawhi Leonard on this team when we had an opportunity to get him at the peak of his powers, and that was that. And but my thing with Ballmer is, if he did do that, right, this was sloppy. You know, the fact that there's $7 million outstanding debt that's there, it's like, you should have covered your tracks better if you're going to do something like this. I thought Ballmer was a little smarter than that. So Mark Cuban's whole angle is Ballmer's not that dumb. So if the Clippers get found guilty, it's not going to look good for Ballmer. And yeah, I know, as you said, one of the richest, most successful people in the world. But this would be a definite, like, black mark for Steve. And that's ultimately what I care about. Like, I do not care about Kawhi and what happens to him, really. It's more about Ballmer's reputation, because Ballmer's the one that's been our savior. Like, he's literally like our Lord and Savior. Like, he transformed this franchise. He literally affected the happiness of many fans, including myself, with his new stadium, with the fact that we have belief that one day we can win a championship nowadays. With Sterling, we never felt we could win a championship. It was just, everybody has their own reasons as to why they're a Clipper fan over a Laker fan. Cheap tickets. Quentin Richardson and Darius Miles, maybe Lob City, maybe Elton Brand and Sam Cassell. But at the end of the day, we still felt like it would take a miracle for us to win a championship. Now we don't feel that way. We have a great owner. I think we still feel like it would take a miracle because we're the Clippers, but a lot of "we're the Clippers" just stems from years and years and decades of Donald Sterling having us in the mud.
Yep. And I'm so glad to have you on at this time to speak on that. Like, I can't speak to how much Ballmer means, and you know, I'm sure there's plenty of people that aren't Clippers fans that are listening to this that, like, just simply wouldn't understand, right? But you're going from a miserable owner, you know, before all, you know, the racist scandal came out about Donald Sterling, where, like, you know, the wins weren't there, the franchise management was questionable at best, and now you have this new arena, you're outside of the shadow of the Lakers, you go all in, you have a massive offseason in one of the first years he's taken over the team. Like, I really appreciate you kind of saying that and providing that context, so this just makes it even more difficult. But I agree, it's going to be really interesting to see. I think, for what it's worth, I think the closest thing to a smoking gun is just the timing of Dennis Wong payment that took place, and the timing of that with the $1.75 million that Kawhi Leonard was supposed to receive. But I, for what it's worth, I don't think we're going to get any more concrete evidence than that, just because at some point, even though it was sloppy, like we said, Ballmer's a very smart guy. So I don't think we're going to get any more evidence that's more concrete than that, unless you disagree.
You just got to wait and see, I guess.
100%. So on that note, what do you think the punishment will be? We're just kind of speculating right now, but it'd be foolish to not ask what your prediction would be. If you had to guess, you don't have to go into the specifics of the pick, but do you think this is going to be a Adam Silver's really his first, like, drop the hammer moment? Or do you think with the All-Star game coming up, the relationship and the respect that I'm sure he has for Steve Ballmer, just like we were talking about, do you think he'll kind of take it easy with all those things in mind?
That's a tough question to answer because I don't know. I mean, the Joe Smith stuff, there was a lot more concrete evidence when it came to the last time something like this happened. People are talking about voiding Kawhi's contract. I just don't see that happening. Adam Silver seems like he's very much, I don't want to say he's on our side, but he seems very pro Ballmer in this kind of thing. So I can't answer, to be honest, but I will say I think it'll be nothing major. Let's just put it that way.
I like that.
Big fine.
Yeah. I mean, we're shooting from the hip here anyway, so that's just worth throwing out in the ether. Like, I really just appreciate you being a good sport about all this, because we're in the same boat, just kind of speculating here. But yeah, I think I kind of agree. I mean, it's a totally different regime. Like we said, like, again, if something else comes out, we'll see. But my stance on it is that I think if the punishment ends up coming out within the next couple of weeks, I think he's going to drop the hammer, because that means that there is more evidence. The NBA's investigation, they dove into the weeds a little bit more and they found something that was like, yeah, he definitely did that shit. You know what I mean? But we already have reports coming out from the NBA, like hinting, like, you know, this isn't going to come out until after the All-Star break, which conveniently is located at the beautiful new Intuit Dome. So if that comes out and, you know, we all act like everybody's up in arms about this right now because, you know, it's September and there's nothing else to talk about NBA-wise and we think it's the biggest story in the world. The reality is we're all going to forget. Everybody forgets. There's just way too much happening in the world, let alone the NBA world. But especially once those games pick up, the storylines, the stars, like, this will be pushed on the back burner. So I think the only way the hammer is dropped is if they find some new evidence in the league's investigation and it comes out within the next couple weeks. But I totally agree with you that if it gets pushed out to the All-Star game like they're saying now, I don't think it'll be too much, for what my opinion is worth anyway. And finally, the last question I had for you is, like, do you think there's going to be any long-term implications of this investigation, whatever comes of it, for the rest of the NBA? Because a lot of what's going on right now is people saying, like, hey, every team is doing this to some extent. I highly doubt other owners have deep enough pockets to go above the salary cap to pay their star players when the player's already making more money than ever before. Like, the contracts are nuts. Like, maybe it's in the form of, you know, other opportunities off the court, other business ventures, you know, even just straight up investment advice. Like, I have no idea what having that level of wealth is like, so I'm speculating here. I really find it hard to believe it's as popular, like, everybody's doing it, but do you think there's going to be more long-term implications for other teams once all the smoke clears on this?
Honestly, not sure, but I think maybe Pablo Torre tries to find something on Jalen Brunson and that team-friendly deal he took. Maybe that's all I can think of, but who knows? I mean, it just kind of came out of nowhere, so, like, it's hard for me to say.
Yeah. Do you know what's really funny and off the cuff? Like, I saw within the past week, it was, like, Andrew Wiggins, like, posting an endorsement with Sport Pasta, and, like, the joke that everybody was making is, like, first of all, I've never heard of Sport Pasta in my entire life. I'm sorry to disparage this brand, but it's, like, all these other, like, no-show contracts that are allegedly out there, like, people are getting in their Instagram posts now. It was just, like, a picture of him, like, outside, like, holding a little box of pasta, and I found that very funny. Like, hey, maybe it is out there, and we're gonna be seeing, like, little breadcrumbs dropped around our Instagram feeds over the next couple of months, so But with that, we'll pivot to something a little bit more fun. Clippers content. I know that you're well aware of all these moves, but I just wanted to catch up my audience for what the Clippers offseason looked like. Widely considered a pretty great offseason for the Clippers standards over the past couple years. And to catch everybody up, the losses on the roster include the trade that sent Norm Powell to Miami. You lost Coffey in free agency to the Bucks. You lost Drew Eubanks in free agency to the Kings. You're probably going to end up losing Ben Simmons for what that's worth. He hasn't signed with a team yet. But you also did trade for John Collins in that same deal that sent Norm Powell to Miami. You signed Bradley Beal. You signed Brook Lopez. You brought back Chris Paul for what potentially could be his last ride, which I know you were super fired up about. Drafted Niederhauser at pick 30. Don't know what the expectations are for him there at this point in time. And you also re-signed Harden, Batum, and Jordan Miller. So as I sit here and say all the moves that your team made this offseason, just let's start off by just giving it a very arbitrary grade on a scale of 1 to 10. And, you know, why don't you go ahead and defend that grade for me as well?
I mean, if the goal is to just make the team that the Clippers had last year better, 10 out of 10, honestly. There's no avenues to make the Clippers a championship team with this core. They're old at the end of the day. You can get closer to a championship, but it's not a championship team anymore. I don't think anyone considers us that. But you address the backup center thing, right? Ivica Zubac had no backup the whole year. Drew Eubanks has not ever played a relevant role on a good NBA team. And he wasn't able to get in the rotation for us for obvious reasons. Just isn't good enough at the NBA level to be on a good team and have a rotation spot. Brook Lopez has always been a starting center in the NBA. He has never been a backup. So this is his first time being a backup. And that gives us another element, being that he's a pick and pop big. We haven't had a pick and pop big on the Clippers since Serge Ibaka. And his tenure with the Clippers didn't really last long because he had a back injury immediately when he came. So I can't even think of the last time the Clippers have had a pick and pop big. You'd have to go back to like Mo Buckets in 2017 or something like that, for just like spitballing off the top of my head. If you count Jermichael Green as one, I don't know. He's a forward to me. But
okay, he was like 6'7", 6'8". Yeah, I can't quite get there, but same principle for sure.
So I think that's going to be a great move. CP3 was a little shocking. I didn't think that we would go for CP3 and Bradley Beal, because that means we have 11 rotation players that are good. So it was going to be something for Ty Lue to have to manage, you know, throughout the season. Who's catching DNPs? Are you playing 11 guys? But that there's already been kind of a unfortunate solution to that, where Bogdan Bogdanovic got hurt at Eurobasket with a reported like torn hamstring. Wow. As of now, we have 10 guys, you know, that we're going to play. And CP3 is really just Harden insurance. He's still great at what he does, which is get teams good shots in the pick and roll. He still has that right elbow mid-range coming off screens that he's had for his entire career. And the craziest part about CP3 last year was that he played all 82 games. Insane for a guy who's been injured so much throughout his career. This is going to be year 20. And as you mentioned, the feel-good side of things. But I genuinely do think that when Harden's out of the game, now Chris Paul can run the offense and be another pick-and-roll maestro. Will it be stagnant? Will it be slow? Absolutely. It's not going to be very fun basketball to watch, in my opinion, unless you like that style of play. But I think we'll be able to get good shots every time down. And then John Collins, you know, we bring in a proper athletic power forward. I know the power forward position in today's NBA is a little bit like wonky, like it's just bigger, small forwards. But John Collins is a guy who, you know, at times has had the ability to play small ball five. He can be a secondary rim deterrent when Zubac gets pulled away from the basket a bit, like help side-wise. And he just came off a great year in Utah where he shot really well from the field and from three. He's very athletic, so I could see him, you know, connecting with James Harden for some lobs and offensive rebounding. Mainly John Collins is brought in because Aaron Gordon caused us problems in the playoffs last year, and now we have more size. We slide Kawhi to the three. Now we have a big front court with Kawhi, John Collins, and Ivica Zubac. And then there's, of course, Bradley Beal, who we got for $5.5 million a year. I think he's got a lot to prove. You know, he's been touted, and honestly for good reason, as not much of a winning player his last couple of years. He hasn't shown much to help a team win. The Suns failed to achieve expectations both these years, especially this past year in miserable fashion. But he's still a talented player where, if you look at the stats, 17 points on very good shooting splits. I think him replacing Norman Powell will be a good role for him. The only thing I'm questioning is our starting lineup. It doesn't involve a designated point of attack defender, which made our defense so good last year, in Chris Dunn and Derek Jones Jr., who are supposed to come off the bench. So it's on Ty Lue and the coaching staff to manage that. That part makes me nervous, but the Clippers roster, it's old. It's old. I acknowledge that. It's not a championship contender, but it's a damn good roster with 11 solid rotation players that would get into just about any rotation in the NBA.
Well, I appreciate that analysis of the roster there. And I think that, you know, one of the first points you touched upon was the almost having too much depth can be a problem at times, right? Especially, yeah, though, when you're dealing with younger teams, when they're at that point in their career where they're trying to maximize their earnings, they're trying to show that they belong in the league. This is not that with this Clippers team, right? Like, I think there's going to be it's going to be much easier for the guys to buy in, A, when you have one of the best coaches in the league in Ty Lue. Everybody is at that final stages of their career where they're just trying to make it happen, right? They know that this is, you know, one of the last runs that they're going to have, especially for guys like CP3, maybe even Harden. I know he's still got another fat contract and played at an all-NBA level last year, to be totally honest with you. But still, I think it's going to be much easier to get that buy-in. I think it's going to be much easier to load manage. And I'm really glad you touched on the John Collins piece as well, because to be honest with you, like when that deal went down, I really didn't like it for the Clips, just because I love Norm Powell. I mean, I've been banging the drum for that guy forever. He's one of my favorite league pass guys, and I do think he's going to crush in Miami. But I think the way that, again, remembering that you brought in Bogdanovich last year, again, hopefully he's healthy. Hopefully that doesn't end up being as serious as initially reported, like you just mentioned. And then also bringing in Bradley Beal to you hope he can be 80% of Norm Powell. Like, I think anybody that thinks Bradley Beal is going to be better probably just hasn't watched a lot of Bradley Beal and Norm Powell the past couple years. But, you know, if he could be 80% and then you bring in that lob threat, I think that just raises the ceiling of the team a ton. Do you agree with that statement? Like, do you think this is definitely a team that's better than last year?
100%. It's just the only thing I'm scared of is starting out games. If we don't have, like, they're going to ask Bradley Beal to guard the opposing team's best guards and stuff. To start games, are we going to get torched? We have a lot of offense. Are we going to get torched to start games, though? That is something to consider. And also, something that we didn't mention, even though his name is up in flames right now, Kawhi Leonard is healthy right now, start training camp. We didn't have that last year. That matters. He's still a really good player. He's still the best player on this team. Averaged 25 points on efficient shooting splits in the playoffs. While it wasn't enough to win, he was still objectively very good. So not good enough. But Kawhi's still a beast at the end of the day.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I mean, it's always been the if healthy and when healthy and those caveats applied. But like, yeah, we saw him get into form and get in the swing of things last year after he warmed up after like a month. And, you know, he had some awesome moments during the playoff. Now it's been too long since the series against Denver, but he had that one game where he totally took over, was easily the best player on the court. And you know that if he's on your team, he has a chance to do that any night. And that is against the unquestioned best player in the world in Jokic, and he significantly outplayed him, at least for those 48 minutes. So
yeah,
do you think there's two. Game two, that's right. Do you think there's a chance that, depending on the matchup, like, again, just to say it out loud for my listeners here, like, the projected starting lineup, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, would just be Harden, Beal, Kawhi, Collins, and Zubac, I would imagine. I mean, do you think on the depending on the matchup, you could push Kawhi to the four and then plug in Derek Jones to start at the three? Like, I know it was last year that, you know, he was always coming off the bench and you guys had Chris Dunn there. We're assuming that spot goes to Bradley Beal now. I mean, I just feel like Derek Jones was an awesome. He was locked into being the starter with the Mavs when they made it to the finals the year before. He was awesome in that role. Like, I never really understood why he didn't play as much. And obviously you watched the Clippers more than I did. But I just wonder if that would be a way to kind of fix that, where you're taking the load off Kawhi. Because as it's set up right now, it would be kind of silly to not have Kawhi be your point of attack defender defending on the matchup. So didn't know what you thought about that potential lineup.
I mean, I think if the Clippers aren't defending to the level that the coaching staff considers satisfactory, maybe you put in Derek Jones Jr. for John Collins, but John Collins is making like $25 million a year. It's going to be hard to put him on the bench.
That's right. He got that fat contract. I think this is the last year of his contract, but that was a fat contract nonetheless.
Right. And then Kawhi, how many number one options are guarding the best player on the other team? You know?
Totally.
So, and this is not the Kawhi Leonard from 2014, from 2015 that was doing that. It took us to be down 3-2 under elimination against the Mavericks in 2021 for us to put Kawhi on Luka. So it's like the absolute desperation moment for that. And even this past year, we had Chris Dunn, we had Derek Jones Jr. So you didn't put Kawhi on Jamal Murray. And look, this is the thing about Jamal Murray. When he's got it going, there's no one in the world that can stop him from getting his shots off. He has counters to everything. He's just not very quick. So he doesn't really get by guys. But in terms of creating space for his shots, he gets his shots off. He just doesn't always make those shots, and he lives off a diet of tough jumpers. But when he hits them, it's like nothing you can do. Well, at the end of the day, our offense, I think, was a bigger problem than our defense in the playoffs. So I don't think we're going to see John Collins get moved out of the starting lineup, but we will see.
Totally. It's all matchup dependent. And frankly, in the regular season, I don't think that, you know, teams are just kind of constantly load managing. They're not practicing that much. They're not really making tweaks to the lineup to just, you know, scheme against like a regular season matchup in October against the Hawks. You know, playoff time, I think it could be a different story. But I do think, I mean, Derrick Jones just impressed me so much, even in the final series for my Celtics, you know, basically belt to ass the Mavericks. I mean, Derrick Jones was awesome as a point of attack defender. Like, I couldn't believe that story, like, after that many years in the league, where it's like, oh, that's the dude that can fly, like, and all of a sudden, he's hitting threes at a high clip, he's locking guys up. Again, man, my memory sucks right now. I'm trying to think of who he locked up early in that playoff run for Dallas. He was awesome.
I can remind you. I mean, you were on my show for the preview for that finals, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, okay, that was fun. I think, no, it was, first round, it was Paul George. He clamped him, held him to 19 points per game average without Kawhi, which was Paul George's last straw with a lot of Clipper fans at that point. I mean, Kawhi goes down, you got to average more than 19 points, dude. And then second series was SGA. Didn't necessarily, like, clamp him by any means, because he averaged 30. But someone still got to guard him. You know what I'm saying? If someone else is guarding, maybe he averages 40. Maybe they don't win the series. And then it was Anthony Edwards. He did a pretty damn good job on in the conference finals. But I think Jaylen Brown and Tatum got the better of him. But I think it was more that, you know, His shooting was more of an issue in that series than, Tatum had some bad games in terms of shooting the ball, but yeah, it's tough because someone's got to guard Jaylen, someone's got to guard Tatum. You had PJ Washington and Derrick Jones as those guys. I think Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum obviously took care of business, but it was to me, with the Celtics, it was the rest of your roster. I mean, Kyrie and Luke, you guys clamped Kyrie. That was the main thing. With Kyrie not playing well, there was nothing left for them to get. There was not enough points for them to be scored. But you guys also had, like, Drew Holiday and Derek White would be the third best player on the Mavs, like, as of 2024. So that's where
I shed a tear, man. I didn't think we'd be doing this. And then I look at my roster now, and I'm just like, fuck. it's crazy how quickly things change. So, I mean, we'll talk about winners and losers of the offseason a little bit. No, man, that's all great points, and it is just nice to have that trump card, right? Like, it's nice to have a guy that, you know, if needed, can play 30 minutes a night and be that every round point of attack defender. If he's off the bench, maybe it makes it a little clunky, but, you know, you have such a good coach at the helm. I trust that he'll make the right moves there. So with that in mind, going back to the Clippers roster, and again, just announcing this for my audience here, you got Harden, Bradley Beal, CP3, and John Collins, all with potential outs after their contracts this season. So I say all that. I think we even had like a similar discussion the last time I had you on my podcast. I think it was like 2 years ago, and I might have asked even the same question. But with that in mind, do you think this is truly the last ride for this version of this Clippers team?
I mean, I sure hope so, honestly. But some of these guys' contracts expire in 2027.
Yeah.
I would say
comes to mind, right? I mean, he's got a couple more years left.
I believe Harden as well. He's got a player option after this year, but
yeah,
I think my guess is 2027, so we'll just have to see. Chris Paul, as far as he's concerned, is this going to be his last season? He's going to play 21 years in the NBA. It's kind of insane how long he's lasted with all the injuries that he's had, but hey, man, at least he's having those years with us where he belongs, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah, man. I mean, I love it. I've been banging the drum for Chris Paul forever, and especially in the latter years of his career. Like, people don't realize because everybody, rightfully so, stopped watching the Spurs after Wemby got hurt last year, had the medical condition, rather. But, you know, he's still solid. And just with how heliocentric, I guess we'll say, the Clippers offense can be at times with Harden. And I know I'm also thinking back to, like, early season last year where Harden had to carry the burden before Kawhi was, like, back in the lineup and everything like that. But it is just kind of nice where, like, you know, those other guys in the team, like, they're always going to have that floor general that they can lean on. Now, obviously, Harden and Chris Paul have very different styles of play, but you just kind of trust that when either of those guys are on the court, like, the quality of looks that you're getting consistently is raised significantly. Like, those guys improve for the most part the guys that they have playing around him. And so I think it helps when you have two guys that can do that, right? Now, how much are you going to be asking Chris Paul to do that? That just kind of depends on the health of the other old guys on the team and you know, what he's at and or where he's at in that point in the season. But I still think he can give you a really solid spark, and knowing that he's only going to be needed for, you know, between 15 and 20 minutes per night most of the time, that makes me feel good about the production that you can expect from CP3. So if the Clippers hit their ceiling as a team, right, and this is kind of a unique open-ended question, take it wherever you'd like to go, but what does that look like, right? Like, if the Clippers were to make as deep of a run as humanly possible, describe, like, in terms of who on the roster is stepping up, the way that that team plays, and even where you think they'll end up when it comes to, like, playoff seeding, like, what that peak season would look like for the Clippers this year.
Yeah, top three seed for sure. I think that's non-negotiable. Top three seed, obviously, between 52 to 58 wins. I think this is the deepest team we've ever had. Like, as since I've been a fan, like, quality depth across the board. Zubats taking another step up. You might not see that statistically because of all the guys we have, but he is the best part of our team. Like, in terms of as a fan, seeing him grow, especially for me, like, it's funny because it's, like, kind of ironic because I'm a smaller guard, but, like, we as Gen Z guys that, you know, born in the late 90s, we have not seen many great centers in our time as basketball fans, you know? Now we're seeing a resurgence of that position with Jokic and Joel Embiid. I would put Jokic in a different category, though, than Embiid all time, and I think anybody would agree with that. But we didn't live in the eras of the Bill Russell and the Wilt Chamberlains, or, you know, the 80s with Kareem and Moses Malone and all those guys, or, you know, obviously the 90s with Shaq, Hakeem, Alonzo Mourning, Ewing, and all those guys. We saw Dwight Howard, you know, as the best center of our generation, and Boogie Cousins and Marc Gasol. So to have a guy that we can dump it down to, Jump Hook City, I mean, that is a really satisfying feeling. After years of DeAndre Jordan, who all he could do was catch lobs, but he had no touch to save his life at the NBA level, I mean, it's a real breath of fresh air. And also, what kind of guy Zoo is. Like, in terms of every single person that is involved with the Clippers, whether it be team personnel or media personnel or fans, not one time have I ever heard someone say a negative word about Zoo, about who he is as a guy and who he is as a player. And I think that speaks volumes, that because I can't say that about everyone on the team. I've obviously heard things about Kawhi and Harden and even Westbrook being moody and whatever, diva symptoms. Not Zoo. Zoo is very humble, and he just continues to get better. So I think Zoo having another great year hopefully makes the All-Star team, but I just think that the stats might hurt him. John Collins fits in like a glove. James Harden gets preserved a bit with Chris Paul having a solid year. Kawhi, I don't think he'll play 65 games, but let's say he plays 60 games, all NBA level kind of player, top three seed. I think my heart wants to say we can make the conference finals if we avoid OKC, but I think the most realistic is second round exit. We win a series again, that would be really nice for the fan base, but that's probably the best case scenario, I'd say. Second round or conference finals. No way I see us making the finals, because we're just too old. I think we're going to run out of gas at some point.
Now, real quick, if you were in the East, how much would that tone change? Because I honestly, like, I'm not gassing it. I think you would be the best team in the East.
A lot.
Like
a lot, man. But again, you know, I think this might be somewhat of like a, I don't like using the word hater because I don't have anything personal against these guys, but I do actively hate the way James Harden plays. I do. Like, it's just a personal, like, basketball conviction thing. Like, I'm of the school of ball movement and player movement. Like, I think the Warriors play good basketball. I think the Denver Nuggets play good basketball. But most teams in the NBA today, like, no offense, but sometimes I think the Celtics just run high pick and roll. They have so much talent that they can get by, but it just becomes drive, kick, open three, which is what the NBA is now, and it's, like, efficient basketball. But I don't think it necessarily is, like, whenever I say good and bad basketball, I think about, like, what kids are learning in a lot of ways, you know? And I think there's a thing about how certain teams in today's NBA ignore the mid-range, and I don't like that. I think that you can't ignore and post-play, partially because there aren't post-up guys in the league today, but I just think inside-outside is valuable, and I think we're very perimeter-centric now. Everybody's a face-up player. I don't think that necessarily is good, but the reason I say that is because James Harden has not won a series. This is like a fun, like this is an opinionated statement, but he hasn't won a series against what I consider like a very good team since 2015 when they beat us. Like, let me just do the exercise with you. All right. 2016, he lost first round. In 2017, that Thunder team that Russell Westbrook won MVP with and he averaged a triple-double that after Kevin Durant left, do you consider that a very good team?
No.
Yeah.
I've never been – the way you describe Harden has kind of been my, like, career-long stance against Russell Westbrook, to be totally honest with you. Just – and honestly, I've embraced it a little bit more because I think he's embraced his role as a role player the past couple of years, so put that to the side. But when he was at his peak, I never had any reservations about him being not a winning player. So any team with Westbrook, no. But anyway, continue with your exercise because I did not consider that Thunder team very good.
Okay. 2018 – the Minnesota Timberwolves, that was the year they had Jimmy Butler. They were the eighth seed, though, and Cat and Wiggins hadn't been to the playoffs before. Would you consider that a very good team?
I'm trying to think back to what, like, a ballpark of what their record was, but no. Especially in the West at that time, like, there were still way better other teams in the West at that time. Like, nobody ever looked at that Timberwolves team as being top four. I mean, shit, I sold tickets for the team right after that season, and they were hard to sell because everybody knew that Jimmy was leaving, and, you know, they didn't make much noise in the playoffs, whatever. So, no, the answer is no.
It was a 1-8 matchup. To be fair, though, to the Timberwolves, they were like the 3 or 4 seed before Jimmy got hurt, and then they ended up being the 8 seed. But against a team like the Rockets that were a championship contender, like you have to, supposed to be a hard series for you. Yeah. And it wasn't because outside of Jimmy Butler, the other guys, Taj Gibson and Jeff T got some playoff experience, but they were past their primes at that point. Okay, and then there's that Utah team with rookie Donovan Mitchell that beat the Thunder. Is that a very good team?
No, it was not. That team came out of nowhere. I still can't believe that they beat, because they also beat that Paul George version of the Thunder too and everything like that, right? So yeah, no, they were not. They came out of nowhere, and that put Spida on the scene from an early age, but definitely not a good team.
Same team the following year, Utah Jazz, Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, sophomore Donovan Mitchell. I think it's a good team. Is it a very good team?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
And then the 2020 Thunder with Chris Paul, SGA, and Dennis Schroeder. Was that a very good team that snuck into the playoffs?
That was such an awesome Chris Paul year, man. Like, that was the year that it was like, man, this guy is like the ultimate floor raiser. But no, like, they didn't have the talent. SGA wasn't anything close to what he is now. Like, absolutely not. Yet again.
Okay. And then in 2021, the Celtics without Jaylen Brown in the first round when he was with the Nets. That team was the worst Celtics team in the Tatum era.
Yeah. Tatum had that 50 ball in what? That was game one, I want to say, right? Where he was going crazy. Was it game one, or am I messing
Boston.
That up? You're right. So it had to have been game three or four at that point, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah, without JB, I mean, that version of the Celtics had no shot in that series. I was just psyched to have Tatum have that game in that moment and not like go down in a sweep at that point. So.
And then there's two more. One is the Toronto Raptors. In 2022 with Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet. Right, they were overachieving. And then the following year is the Nets after they traded KD with Mikal Bridges as their number one option. These are the teams that James Harden has beaten in the playoffs the last, like, 7-8 years. So my point being is that every time he plays against, like, a very good team, he just hasn't come through in big games. Like, he has good games in the series, but then comes a point where I fear his performance. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with it. It's like, in the East, I would say we're the favorite, but it's like, I don't know, when we play against the Knicks or the Cavs, how will he do? I'm not sure. So I would say, if you asked me the same question for the East, I would say we could go to the championship.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we could do the hypotheticals all day, but I did want to just throw it out there that, like, if we were to rank the top teams in the league talent-wise, it's a very different exercise than predicting the future of the Clippers just because the West is so loaded. But first of all, pardon the glaze, but that's why you guys got to check out Dime Dropper's channel right there. No notes. He just went off the cuff, named every team that James Harden just beat in the last, like, 8 years. And while I'm like, oh, yeah. And one of them's like my team or whatever. So anyways, I just got to respect you for that. But thing I will say, though, I mean, Harden really impressed me last season. I know you're not disparaging Harden's performance during the regular season last year, but, like, he was, like, kind of an easy choice for me for all NBA, and I am excited to see, with a better roster, deeper roster, shooters all around him, equal buy-in because you have that older feel across the whole roster, and he had such, like, it's such a cool style of play. Such a cool two-man game with Zubac because he is so goddamn talented. I mean, I think Zubac really might be the most underrated player in the NBA. Like, I know you see your fans of your team show him a lot of love, and rightfully so, but I just, you know, he was like a guy, again, for me, when I was going to the All-NBA teams, like, because there's that 65-game minimum, like, he was in consideration for an All-NBA spot for me last year. He was in consideration for Defensive Player of the Year. I don't know. I'm sure he made an All-Defensive team. I don't know if it was first or second or what, but he was just such a dog on that end of the court. So I just feel like when you take that roster, improve it a little bit, and then you add the lob threat, because that's really what Zoo is missing. Like, obviously, he's a big body. You can throw him lobs, whatever, but that's not the strong suit of his game. I just feel like there is a chance. It'd be crazy to bet on James Harden improving on a really special season last year at his age, but there's a chance he does. So I just wanted to throw that out there. And if you think I'm crazy for saying that, let me know.
No, he definitely deserved it. James Harden last year in the regular season, he was a beast.
Yep. And even, again, moments of that Denver series, but I mean, the game seven was just so crushing, dude. Like, for you guys to not show up like that, and for him, again, it's like, I'd rather see you go 5 of 30 than just shy away from the moment and just stop shooting the ball. Again, not trying to open up old wounds for you in that game seven, but again, to show that you were one game away from beating a team that was one game away from beating the eventual NBA champion just shows how talented this team can be. And I know you can't really do the rock, paper, scissors shit in the NBA. Every matchup's different. It doesn't really work like that, but this is a really talented team. So hopefully my listeners understand that as well.
Yeah, it is.
Perfect, man. Well, hey, before we get into some other NBA offseason talk while I have you, is there any other Clippers points you want to make? Anything you want to say about your team heading into this year?
No, year two at the Intuit Dome should be fun, man. Check out the content because you just get a fan's perspective of things. And, you know, I don't know how many content creators are interviewing fans outside the arena, and that's something that I love doing. And if you want to know about the journey at Intuit, like a new stadium and all that, how it's been for fans, check out the channel. That's all I can say about that.
Real quick, one more question popped in my head in that regard. I know you're a sports fan across the board. You've been traveling. You've been seeing some soccer games, everything like that, just from following you on socials. Where does the Intuit Dome rank in terms of arenas that you've been at? I know there's like a different vibe between like state-of-the-art new technology, like what you have there, and then like, you know, the classic old school stadiums that have all this lore to it. But, you know, is it the favorite arena that you've ever been? And if you had like a top three, I would be curious as to where Intuit ranks in your top three stadiums you've ever been to.
Can I discount like field sports, like SoFi and like those stadiums, or we're talking just because I think it's different with arenas and like big stadiums?
It is different. It's up to you, really. I mean, I was kind of thinking all across the board because I just figured from like a basketball arena perspective, Intuit would probably be up there. That was just kind of my guess, but I was just curious where you went with that question.
Yeah, I mean, for indoors, I mean, of course, Intuit is the best place to see a game. There's no historical value to it, though, but it's the best place to see a game. Undoubtedly, it's amazing. But after Intuit, see, like, I love Staples Center for what it means to me. It's a beautiful arena. It's really big. It's you know, has its history, even though it's only a 25, 26-year-old stadium. And the statues out front are amazing. I think they have a great staff that, you know, for many, many years had to handle so many events of different sorts. So I think it's a really beautiful stadium aesthetically. It's not a great place to watch a game, though, for basketball. It's not. But it's aesthetically beautiful. I think after that, though, it's got to be – I think TD Garden's pretty nice, honestly. It's a good place to watch a game. The crowd is great. But I think Madison Square Garden – in terms of niceness, TD Garden's nicer than Madison Square Garden because it's newer. But MSG, there's just something about going to see a game there that's just like, I would put it over into it for sure. Like, it's just, it's special. It's just this, it feels like you're in the center of the universe. And it's just an amazing feeling. The organ, the roof, it's special, man. It really is. Yeah. But I would say that would be my top four. Besides that, I've only been to Washington and Phoenix. And I think Phoenix was nicer than Washington, but it was pre-renovations. That's the thing. Is a lot of it's like when you go, you know, these stadiums, they renovate these stadiums. MSG's done renovations since I've been. So I don't know. I haven't been there in over 10 years, but yeah, Intuit's the best indoor arena. As far as outdoors, SoFi is incredible. The Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta is sick.
And I want to go just for the menu. Every year, like the Falcons, like their first home game, their menu like pops up on my Twitter and it's like actually affordable food. And it looks pretty bomb. And I'm like, dude, what I would do to just be able to go to that in frequent games there for anything if the menu looks like that would be crazy.
And I'm telling you, honestly, it's not all hype. Like, I went to the games. I was shocked at the prices. They had, like, Jamaican jerk chicken, tacos. Like, it was sick. And it was affordable. And they gave you, like, this big souvenir cup that you could just – it was well-priced. Like, that was so cool about it. I think SoFi is probably bigger and nicer, but that's pretty – it's an amazing stadium. But honestly, a stadium that I think was, like, just breathtaking as well was the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in London. It was incredible. Like, every seat was good. They have like this wall-like steepness behind one of the goals that's really cool. And every single room, like in the concession stands, is just like a big bar. But by the, like on the outskirts of it, of the bars of each room, there's windows, right? See-through windows. You can look out and see everything. But there's a ledge that you can put your beer on every single window, like, which I think is super convenient and
cool.
It's
all part of the fan experience, dude. It all meshes together. So that's important.
Yeah, I think Tottenham Stadium, honestly, I'd even give it a little bit of an edge over SoFi, as much as I hate to say it. Because the only reason I say that about SoFi is because the 200 section at SoFi, there's dead ends. Like, you can't access – you have to go through, like, a maze, essentially. I'm exaggerating, but to get into the 200 section at SoFi, whereas Tottenham Stadium is much more easy to navigate.
Hey, well, I appreciate that insight. See, it's always – it's an impossible question when you're measuring the historical value. I should have figured, and I appreciate – not being biased and putting like an arena like MSG, especially for someone like yourself that really values the history of the game there. So that makes a lot of sense. But pivoting here into some off-season talk, it's crazy that we're like 30 days out from the season, dude. I don't even understand it. I'm trying to sit here and remember all of the crazy moves that we were all shocked about like 2 months ago when free agency was in full swing. But just in totality on the off-season, and I just was curious as to if you had only had to pick one team that won this NBA offseason, what team do you think it would be? Two come to mind for me that kind of stand above the rest. I'm curious if you're in the same boat.
I mean, I'm going to say Houston because getting KD when they had a clear issue scoring the basketball in big moments, I think that matters. And then I think the Nuggets made some good moves. Cam Johnson. Yeah, Cam. Those are the two?
Yeah, those are the two for me. Like what you were about to say, I'm sure, is like just the resourcefulness of that front office to finally build around Jokic and effectively turn MPJ, and I guess Russ, because I'm assuming he's not going to be back in a Nuggets uniform, but into what was it? Cam Johnson, Tim Hardaway Jr., Jonas Valanciunas, and Bruce Brown. Like,
yeah.
All you needed was one more guy in that OKC series, and that could have looked drastically different. Now, Denver might as well be my second team at this point because I've just picked them in the finals like every year the past couple years because I just have so much belief in Jokic and I know that they have the capability of making it back. So I just feel like the ability to make that jump and actually incrementally improve, you know, Denver's there. But I do have to respect Houston as well because I felt like they were the perfect Kevin Durant team because they looked like they were a Kevin Durant away and having that guy at the end of games from being an actual contender last year because I never took them serious even though they were awesome in the regular season.
Yeah.
Inversely, biggest loser of the offseason. This one's tougher, and I have my answer in mind, and it's a little bit different than when I gave this answer like 2 months ago on my podcast. So just curious. I know it's kind of tough to think of all the offseason moves at once, but if you had to pick one team that you just didn't like what they did this offseason, who would it be?
I mean, the Golden State Warriors haven't done anything. They haven't done nothing. And then
still on Kuminga watch.
I don't know about the Celtics, man. I
know that was mine too.
I know it's gonna be a weird year, but yeah. Like, I don't know what the point of getting Simons was unless they package him. Like he'll get some points, he'll get some buckets during this regular season for sure. I just feel like Pritchard can do a lot of what he does, but I don't know. The more the merrier. You're gonna need shot creation. You know who I want to give a shout out to that I forgot when the winners, the Atlanta Hawks. I think they have a much better team around Trae Young now. Getting Nikhil Alexander Walker. Bringing in Porzingis, who we know is only good for like 45 to 50 games, but like he'll help when he's there. But Nikhil Alexander-Walker, I think that's going to be great for them. Just like you have Nikhil, you have Dyson Daniels, and hopefully for once, Jalen Johnson can stay healthy. But you have Caris LeVert coming off the bench. That's some pretty good guys around Trae Young. Like you're building a defense-first team around Trae Young. I think that's pretty big time. I think the Magic getting Desmond Bain was good, but what's up with the Memphis Grizzlies? Like, what's their plan here? And then the Sacramento Kings, like, what are they doing? I just don't know. Those teams are just like shockingly, like, I don't know to me. The Warriors not improving in any way is also like, their whole thing is just first full year of Jimmy Butler. But, like, I don't know, man. I don't know if that's enough.
No, I agree. I think there's different ways to look at it. Like, if you look at what roster, like, got worse more than any other team, it's easily the Celtics, right? Now, you can defend them just by saying, like, we knew this was coming. They were in cap hell. The Tatum injury, it completely derails everything. And I think for the value of how it, you know, how much value those Porzingis and Holiday contracts lost within the last couple months of the season, like, I think the return that they got for it was solid. But if I'm sitting there looking at the roster we had last year and the roster we have this year, it's not even close. So we would have to lose if that's what you're measuring it on. But at the same time, there is direction. We have our own pick. We could be right back in the mix next year. I think there's the teams like the Kings and the Bulls, you could say every year, like, what is the plan? Like, there is no plan. And so I consider them losers too. But I think we're pretty aligned, because I did an exercise where I ranked the biggest winners and losers a couple months back. And I think we just hit on, like, every single team I had in that group. So, but heading into this season, I think there's going to be a lot to watch for in the NBA. You know, besides the Clippers, obviously, like, what are you most excited to see this NBA season? It can be a team, it can be a player, it can be a storyline, just anything that excites you the most about this upcoming NBA season.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I gotta exclude the, because the Lakers, like, I'm not necessarily excited for them, but, like, I watch all their games because they're local. But definitely the Rockets with KD. I think it's just ridiculous how, like, how many teams this guy's gone to, but, like, he's such an important player in NBA history that if he goes to a new team, that's must-see television. It's just absurd how many teams he's been to when he's still good. I just think that back when I was a kid, that was viewed as, like, whack, you know what I mean, to go to so many teams. But that excites me. I think I'll definitely be tuning in a lot of their games on League Pass. The Spurs, I think, will be interesting. They have so much young talent at this point. And then first full season of Fox. He only lasted, like, what, 9 games or something?
And even less of games that he actually played with Wemby healthy, which is really all that matters for the future of that team.
Right. You got Fox there. You've got Carter Bryant there. Dylan Harper. Like, they have so much young talent. And they still have Vassell, and they still have Castle. Like, I just think...
Well, yeah, Rookie of the Year. Yeah, of course.
I just think that that is going to be very interesting to watch. And then in the East, I don't know. The Atlanta Hawks, I'm telling you, I think the Atlanta Hawks will be very interesting. Like, I'll probably watch a little bit of their games. But what are the teams that come to mind for me in terms of, like, who I'm going to be really tuning into on League Pass when I have time?
Yeah, I think the Hawks are the League Pass sleeper for sure. I think they're up there. I think in the West, if I had to pick a League Pass sleeper, I'd probably go with the Pelicans, just because people are so down on them. They had a weird offseason, but I just like watching small guards that can play in the NBA and seeing what Fears can do. Like, I didn't necessarily agree with the pick, but I think having him, you get Murray back in the mix, assuming that he's healthy to start the year after the Achilles injury. Now that I say that out loud, I think he probably will miss some time to start. And then I still love watching Zion. I don't care. Like, I know you can say whatever you want about him as a player, but when the dude's right, there's literally nobody like him, probably in the history of the game. So I love watching the Pelicans as well. My favorite storyline, though, I don't know if you agree with me on this, but I kind of interpreted this a different way. If I had to give my take, would just be, I'm really excited to see what NBC does with the coverage of the NBA.
Right.
I'm really hoping that it just, again, raises the floor and raises the game of everybody else. Like, hopefully they can set a standard that, you know, ESPN and Prime and everybody else, all the other broadcast booths out there, have to raise their standard to meet NBC, because there's going to be more competition in the marketplace. Because I know there's a lot of discussions about people just being unsatisfied with the way that the NBA is covered.
There was another team that I was... Oh, another team that I was thinking that I think is going to be interesting are the Mavs. Because, yes, they're going to have Kyrie Irving out for a while, but there's a lot of bigs on that team. And first full year of Anthony Davis, Cooper Flagg. I think that's going to be pretty interesting to watch.
Dude, this exercise is just getting me hyped for the season as a whole, man. I think it's going to be fire. Like, I really can't wait. There's so many different teams that are interesting, and I think that's one of my favorite parts about the league is just how much it turns over, because, you know, watching the same team year to year is a completely different experience. So if it's okay with you, the final exercise I'm going to do, again, thank you for your time. We appreciate it. I want to do a little draft where we can alternate our picks, gun to our head, who we would have to select to win the 2026 NBA title. So no restrictions. We can pick teams in whatever conference. Since you're the guest, I'll give you the first pick if you had to pick one team to win it all. And we'll go until we get to 3 teams, because I do think there's a level of contenders and I want to hit on all of them. So make your pick for who you think will win the 2026 NBA title.
Got to be the Thunder.
I think that's No explanation needed, to be totally honest with you. 1-1 has to be them. I think that this becomes a decision for me with where I'd have to go next, but who am I kidding? I mean, I do it with Denver every year, so I might as well keep on riding. I'd have to say the Nuggets. I think they improved maybe the most of any team in the offseason, like what we just said. I mean, maybe you could argue the Rockets improved more, but the Nuggets baseline was already one game away from beating the champs, so I would have to go with Denver at pick 2.
I would have gone with Denver too. I'm going to go with the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Ooh,
they haven't done much. They lost Nikhil Alexander Walker, but their Ant's just getting better. So like, and their team's kind of in their prime right now. Everybody.
Conference finals 2 years in a row, like that, right. Especially for a franchise that, again, I worked for the team a couple years back, like team that had no winning history, like such a long playoff drought, like for them to turn the culture around even after that insane Cat Randall swap, you know, at this time, basically exactly a year ago, like you got to give them respect. So I like that pick. Coming back to me, like it is funny because I feel like strategically I should pick a team in the East. Because, like, I know we're going to go firing off West teams here because that's where the best ones are. But the opportunity to just get lucky and, God forbid, there's an injury once you get to the finals, like, there could be a really weird champion coming out of the East. So I guess I'll make that pick now. And I think I'm going to go with the Cavs, which is crazy for how much they disappointed. Like, you should definitely make the argument based on the resumes that it should be the Knicks here because of their success in the postseason, what they did to my Celtics. But I still believe that Cleveland is the most talented team in the East heading into next year. So if you have any thoughts on that pick, let me know.
No, that's not crazy. I would say I'm going to go with the Lakers. I think the Clippers are going to be better than them in the regular season, but Luka's in his prime. If Luka just like cleans up his nonsense from last season, gets, you know, is in the shape that everybody's talking about that he's in. You got Ayton in there Luka. Now. And like a true Luka number one option, LeBron number two option kind of dynamic, not like a 1A, 1B feel. I think they can be dangerous, but like, we'll see. It's a lot of pressure on Marcus Smart to guard after all the injuries he's been through. I'm not very confident on that. See, that's the crazy part, right? We're talking about all these teams. I think the teams that we named, like the first three teams, are like the only realistic contenders. And I think every year of the NBA is kind of like that. Like, we like to pretend some of these teams have a chance, but they don't really have a chance. It's been like that since like the 60s. I'm telling you, like, it's only three or four teams that have a real chance. There's a lot of teams that can go far, but actually win the whole thing, it's a little different to me.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Like, I think usually it's three, maybe four teams at the most that can actually win it. Okay, so yeah, I'm going to go with Houston then if they're still on the board. I feel like that's good value. I think there's an argument to be made. They could easily be as good as the second best team in the West with the KD addition, but it's a lot to have that team make that leap where like 2 years ago they weren't even a playoff team. And then all of a sudden, I know you're bringing in a guy like Kevin Durant, but you're asking guys like Amen Thompson, who we love during the regular season, to produce in the playoffs. I don't know. But just to summarize, you have the defending champion OKC Thunder. You have the Minnesota Timberwolves and you have the Los Angeles Lakers. But I have the Denver Nuggets. I have the Cleveland Cavaliers and I have the Houston Rockets. So as I expected, you know, five out of the six teams we pick are West teams, which gives you a very, very good idea of the state of the league and what the playoffs are looking like heading into this season. Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate your time, dude. Is there anything else you want to hit or anything else you want to say to the people before we let you go?
No, just thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure. And you can check out more content on Dime Dropper YouTube channel. And of course, Locked On Clippers for all the latest on the Kawhi bomber controversy. But yeah, my own channel is more where I talk about other teams like the Celtics, the Lakers. During the playoffs, try to talk about everybody. This past one was a tough one, but still releasing some content on the playoffs before the season starts that I didn't do.
Yeah. And you're at Dime Dropper on Twitter too, right?
At Dime Dropper Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, yes.
So you got mandatory to follow on Twitter/X. You know, the guy's always beefing with Kevin Durant. He's got the box in his... I was thinking about building out some questions there, but I think that'll have to be a story for another day. Appreciate the time as always, Dime, and we'll be back with more Words with Wallace next week.
Thank you, man.